Manx Care's ambition is to become the best small island health and social care system in the world, and Manx Care's chief executive, Teresa Cope, certainly has the passion and commitment to try and deliver that very worthy aspiration. So why have we not seen that ambition being delivered so far? What obstacles lie in the way of Manx Care delivering health and social services to help us all live long and healthy lives? Teresa Cope joins me now in the studio. Perhaps you could begin by explaining how Manx Care came into being.
We recognise absolutely that the creation of Manx Care was a significant change for the island. I was recruited from the NHS in England. So the way Manx Care operates is not dissimilar to how most health and care organisations operate in England. But it was, and basically it was Sir Jonathan Michael's report which essentially said the sort of the operational delivery, the day-to-day delivery of health and social care for the island needs to be separated from the political aspect and the aspect which deals with strategy and legislation and policy. And so Manx Care was separated. And I think there was a large piece of work undertaken in preparation for Manx Care starting in 2021, but we were in COVID. So I think a lot of ground was lost in that preparation. No one went into establishing Manx Care in the position they would have wished. Manx Care would have preferred to have had a clearer baseline and some of the preparatory work undertaken. But equally, DHSC would have preferred to have had more time spent thinking about what its functions needed to look like. So, for example, in an ideal world, the CQC, Care Quality Commission, and Ofsted inspections of health and care would have happened prior to Manx Care being established and providing that very clear baseline from which improvement could be planned. So that baseline was clear to everybody, transparent to politicians and the public and our staff, and it would have set Manx Care off probably on a better footing. But we are where we are. We were where we were. And we started in the midst of COVID. So the island was in lockdown in April 2021 when Manx Care was created and established. And I remember that August 2021, seeing the highest number of admissions with COVID that there had ever been. So actually 2021, the first year of Manx Care being established, was very much responding to COVID, trying to think about how we start to recover from COVID and live with COVID in the future, but also responding to some of the critical issues that we found. And we focused on quality and safety and compliance. That was our primary goal. We set ourselves three objectives that year. We really wanted to make sure that the services being delivered were of a high quality and safe, particularly. We recognised that we wanted to create a culture for the organisation which valued staff, supported staff. Everyone felt a part of this new organisation. And we wanted to make sure we really understood the finances. So the board of Manx Care call year one our year of discovery, because we really didn't have a very clear picture from which to base our plans.
And that's something perhaps that the Manx public might find quite extraordinary, that the service, whether it was DHSC in its former guise or Manx Care, didn't really understand where the problems were, where the money was being spent, how many people that work for you. How is it that it's so hard for organisations such as Manx Care to actually understand things like that?
I think it was a lack of data, particularly. So you're right, and this is where sometimes the public shouldn't have to worry about that. The public need to feel assured that when they're coming in to receive health and care services, we are taking care and giving them the best care possible. But you're right, we didn't have good quality data on how many people we had in our workforce, how much we were spending on our workforce. We didn't have data around how many incidents, safety incidents we had. we didn't have a true position around the waiting list. Waiting lists were held, but they weren't held accurately. They hadn't been validated.
Because, of course, waiting lists are only, any list is only as good as the information that's put in. And someone could be waiting for a hip operation, but not necessarily on the waiting list. Other people could have already had their hip operation and potentially still been on the list.
Absolutely. And that's what we call, in sort of technical speak, a clean waiting list. We know it's accurate, it's been validated both administratively and clinically, and what we report as waiting times is accurate, but we didn't start from that position. We knew we had some people who were waiting for 5 years for treatment, but what we couldn't do was ultimately rely on that data. So that was one of the first priorities we did, to be able to create accurate data from which we could create a clear baseline, and then we know how we're improving and what we're improving and what the priorities need to be. I talk about something called clinical coding. Now, that is quite technical, but clinical coding is really important in healthcare. Clinical coding helps you look at the outcomes for patients when they've had treatment. It also helps you look at safety management in hospitals and in care. And it helps you to look at incidents like mortality reviews. And we didn't have clinical coding here. So we didn't have that basic data set from which you can plan and research and assure the quality of the healthcare provision that you're providing. It's a fundamental aspect. And this is where we've had to invest quite heavily in those supporting functions, which give us all of the information from which we can operate transparently and assure the public, but also as a board ourselves, monitor that what we are doing is safe, compliant, of a high standard. And, you know, that was 2021-22. In 2022, we were subject to comprehensive inspections, so 90 inspections from both the Care Quality Commission and Ofsted. And whilst there was all the preparation for that, you know, I've been a CQC inspector myself, so I know what good looks like. I know what the CQC are looking for when they come in to inspect your services. And we had to prepare for that.
So knowing what good looks like, what were you fearful for the inspections?
I was. Because what the CQC are looking for is consistency, evidence of data. And, you know, we couldn't rely on our data was still being developed at that point. You know, we know we have amazing staff, very caring staff. But some of the other aspects, we'd put a lot of effort into safe care, one of the CQC domains. We know our staff are caring. You know, we hear that feedback, and I see that every day. But things like responsive, that is looking at waiting times and access standards. And then the well-led is all of the data around training. Clinical governance, how are we managing those services to be effective? So yes, 90 sort of comprehensive CQC and Ofsted inspections during 2022, our second year of operating. And with that regulation, you bring in a new standard. So you set a new bar of what good looks like. So that was year two. And then year three has been responding to that new higher standard of expectation set by the CQC and Ofsted, and also making sure that we are evidencing the progress that we are making, all during some very sort of challenging times. But I think what I'm probably most proud of in the last 3 years is that, yes, we have overspent, but I can absolutely demonstrate that our services are much, much safer than when we started. we have got much better governance across the organisation. We are more transparent, and part of the scrutiny from the public is welcome, but it's in response to us being very transparent.
One of the hardest things in any public administrative role is to keep on target, keep travelling in the direction that you actually want to travel, as opposed to the direction that you end up getting pushed by events, by CQC reports, whatever it may be. I think it's quite important, because I really liked this in your mission, vision and values. I'm not particularly keen on mission, vision and values as terminology, but you talk about becoming the best small island health and social care system in the world. That's a great aspiration, isn't it?
It is, but for us as a board, it's entirely achievable.
So how?
And I think, you know, because we have all of the services under the umbrella of Manx Care, so if you was to sort of compare Manx Care to other organisations, there would be sort of 6 or 7 separate organisations all trying to work together, all operating different governance systems, all having different priorities and perhaps their own mission, visions and values. Whereas we have one clear mission statement, we are an integrated health and care organisation. I inherited as chief exec amazing staff, great staff. We have worked hard to ensure that this is a great place to work. I see so many opportunities of how we can do things differently, how we can innovate. And I have to say, the vast majority of our staff are completely behind this transformation, this opportunity to really make a difference. And so, yes, we probably started from a much lower base than most other health systems. We are still behind in some areas, but the scale of the opportunity that we have is huge. And I do see where we are making such a big difference. You know, the developments around the ambulance service, around our intermediate care provision, our work to develop primary care at scale. You know, I have a very clear vision of how these services will look, and we can get there in the next 5 years.
And of course, things like primary care at scale are, they mean things to you, but to most people listening, perhaps they don't understand. But effectively, this means assisting people to continue to live in their own homes, in their communities, and not becoming quite a substantial financial burden by ending up stuck in a home somewhere or in a hospital.
Yes, it's about delivering care as close to people's locality as possible, to do all the things which keep people well. So we're focusing on keeping well rather than responding to illness. Moving services out of the hospital where possible and where it's safe to do so. And empowering people. And this is where the work with the third sector is really, really important, because that ability to be quite innovative. You know, I was up with the Northern Wellbeing Hub a couple of weeks ago, and they are doing some amazing work. They have the GP practice up there is working really closely with the locality team. And we have the local area coordination, the Jerby Community Initiatives, linked into that. We are identifying people before they get ill. We are providing solutions in a really responsive way. And we are preventing people coming into hospital and needing long-term care. And that's particularly relevant when you think about older people. A hospital stay is often not a good thing. You're trying to keep people well in their communities. And then it goes further. You know, we want people to be able to have home care provision. You know, our hospital is full and it's busy. And We don't want to have to keep building more and more wards and more services.
And most people don't want to be in hospital either. And certainly many people don't want to be in care homes.
It's promoting independence. And you're right. People don't want, you know, that's why we see some people get to such a poor state of health. Because they're so frightened about coming into hospital, to losing their independence, potentially being put in a nursing or a residential home, that, you know, they avoid that contact with health and care services. And what we're trying to say is, come to us early. We'll help keep you well in your local communities. You know, I love the idea around green and blue prescribing, you know, a different approach. So using nature, and using, you know, the assets we have, you know, there's evidence bases around sea swimming, and us being able to use that to promote wellness.
If I travelled back in time, you know, 50, 60 years ago, the sort of thing you're talking about, actually being outside, being in nature, enjoying the benefits of probably a much healthier diet, these sorts of things were very prevalent. And now it almost seems like we've created a whole raft of new services to deal with people's bad habits.
Totally. We have, you're absolutely right, we have over-medicalised people in a number of areas. And it is really important we step back from that. You know, public health input is critical, but, you know, the idea is we keep our population as well as they possibly can be, so they don't need statutory health and care services, and we promote all of those alternatives. You know, I think COVID really taught us some important lessons about valuing, you know, eating well, living well, using nature and enjoying what we have on offer on the island, which is, you know, outstanding.
Because there are, I mean, there's lots of research that shows that if you can just get outside for an hour, your mood is lifted. Maybe not so much on a day like this, where we're recording on a very wet, rainy day, but I suppose even a wet, rainy day has its benefits.
It does, it does. And like I say, we should never reach instantly to either prescribing or treatments where alternatives or just well-being can be promoted. And, you know, one of the first things Manx Care did was really promote what's called a mental health recovery college. So this was around sort of an educational approach to well-being, with mindfulness, lots of programs, lots of education-based, which is supporting those before they get mentally unwell, but also those people who've been mentally unwell and are on that recovery journey. And that's in collaboration with University College Isle of Man. A really, really important offer for people to be able to tap into some of those interventions, which I think really, really help. There's been really strong feedback on how well that's been received. And we have plans to expand and grow that. But that's one of those initiatives which help us become the best small island health and care system in the world, because it's balancing the sort of statutory services in hospital and in the community and mental health and primary care that we must provide, but also absolutely wrapping around that a range of interventions and offers which give the population a great service.
One of the challenges any healthcare service that's provided on a small island, and there are those on the Isle of Man who might argue whether we are or aren't a small island. I mean, there are lots of smaller islands in the world than ours, but maybe that's just me being an old Manxie. But the big challenge, of course, is that you can't have enough people, qualified surgeons in all the different specialities based on the Isle of Man. I think when I first started in the House of Keys back in 2003, we still had general surgeons that could do an awful lot of things, but specialisms have become much more prevalent.
Yeah, and it's definitely a challenge for us. I mean, it also doesn't help some of our efficiencies, because if you look more broadly, sort of health and care provision is usually planned on a much bigger population size, where, you know, one of something could actually fulfill a much larger population. And I think that's where Manx Care does struggle, because we still need that function and that person or that role. But that person, that function, that role could also fulfil an organisation which was 3-4 times the size of Manx Care. So we do. And yes, I mean, we have had huge success over the last 3 years in that we have pretty much recruited to all of our consultant posts. So most of our consultants now are substantive. We have much less reliance on locum and agency. But it is that balance of what we can do on island safely and to the right standard. And Manx Care committed that we will always aim to deliver it on island if we can deliver it to the right standard. But there are some things that we just have to accept we can't do, which is why the clinical networks across to the northwest are so important. So we made it one of our strategic priorities to really develop those relationships with the northwest, not more to build that network so we have those clear pathways when we do need to send our patients off island across to the northwest, but also so our staff link into training. So one of the big successes that we have had is we have Clatterbridge at Nobles. So the Clatterbridge Centre for Oncology, we have mirrored and we work through contractual arrangements with Clatterbridge. We know our oncology provision here on island is an equal standard, using all the same governance, using the same prescribing, having the same links to the oncologists as Clatterbridge. So we can replicate that here on the island safely through that networked arrangements. We're doing the same and we're developing all of those strategic partnerships. We have a great relationship with Alder Hey. It's how we make the best use of those networks so our staff feel part of something bigger, have the opportunity to link into that broader training to keep their skills up to date, but we can actually provide it here on the island. And that's the best of both worlds. We'll always have those challenges around sort of needing a generalist base of skills on the island, but whilst also wanting to make sure we're able to do some of the more specialist work here, which allows us to attract and recruit and retain some great clinicians. And we've been able to do that in the last two years.
Has Manx Care bought a calculator yet? because one of the biggest challenges you have, and it's really very firmly a challenge now for this financial year, is to actually deliver within the budget that you've had set. Now, you've had, I think, is it an extra 40, 43 million, something like that?
43 from the 303 baseline, yes. Mm.
So that sounds like a lot of money. I mean, the overall, is it 230 million, something like that, the budget?
So our budget for 24-25 is 347 million.
Oh, right.
We started at around 280 in year one. And yes, I mean, you know, we overspent in year one. I don't think anyone was really surprised at that. It comes on the back of a history of overspending. Year two was similar. And obviously, the last year, we overspent by 30 million. We are grateful that we have received a substantial increase in our budget for this year. And we are absolutely committed to delivering our services within that balanced budget. But again, you know, I know when I've talked on the man in line, I've really wanted to try and explain why we've had that overspend. Because, you know, fundamentally, we were expecting a higher settlement in health and care based on the Sir Jonathan Michaels recommendations. So the 26 recommendations were still there. One of the key recommendations was a specific funding formula for health and care, recognising the level of growth we were due to see in health and care, but also the level of transformation and improvement needed to get health and care up to the required standard. You know, I think we have to recognise that it's not helpful to keep talking about Sir Jonathan Michael's report now. That was 2019. We've since had CQC and Ofsted, and I think we have a new baseline. But just to sort of put that into context, since Manx Care started, we spent £30 million just on pay awards. So with inflation being so high, this hasn't been factored into our base budget.
And what is the proportion of your budget which is spent on staff costs, roughly?
It's around 75-77%. So we
So 75% of nigh on £350 million is wholly reliant on pay negotiations. And going back to one of your points, you want to be a good place for people to work. People needs to feel that they're valued in the work that they do, and it's well known certainly across, and I'm sure here in the Isle of Man, the demands that are being placed by healthcare workers now, that perhaps their salaries have allowed to be devalued over decades, and they're now saying actually enough's enough, and we want an improvement.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's what, when we talk to staff side and when we do the pay negotiations, that's the point they raise. They had seen 10 years of pay erosion, and at the point where Manx Care started, enough was enough for them. You know, they had just come out of the most challenging period with COVID. They had all been so dedicated, health and care on the front line of the response to COVID. And on the back of pay erosion, inflation going through the roof, of course they were going to ask for a substantial pay rise. They deserved a substantial pay rise. And then Manx Care had to respond to that. So last year, we were £10 million overspent, so we sort of started with a £10 million deficit. Our pay awards cost us close to £10 million. But then also that inflation impact knocks on to our contractors, and we have a wide range of contractors, and they expected a substantial inflation-based uplift on their contracts. And because Manx Care had put in really good contractual governance, again, we were picking up those contractual discussions and negotiations with these providers at a time which was probably the worst time to start holding them to account for contractual delivery, where they're saying, actually, but inflation is 9, 10, 11%. How are you going to reflect that in our contracts? So again, another £9 million went on getting our contractors inflation built into their contracts. So there's your 30 million overspend before we've even thought about additional services, additional safety in our service lines, new developments of services. So, you know, I think the numbers speak for themselves. Despite all of that, and I think this is what gets lost in the totality of the numbers, we have done really well in terms of driving efficiency and productivity out of the organisation. So since Manx Care started, we have taken £20 million out in both cash out recurrently, which, you know, is gone forever. We've taken that cost base out of services and also massively increased the productivity and efficiency. There is still a huge amount to go at. And this comes back to the opportunity that I talk about. There is still much more opportunity for us to be more efficient, be more effective, be more innovative. But it does take time.
I suppose that comes back to where we started, which was data was poor. And with better data, presumably you're better able to understand where increases in productivity could come, where efficiencies in service delivery can be made.
In an ideal world, we would have had really good quality data, and we could have set an improvement plan, cost improvement plan, on day one, which was really going to have traction immediately and start delivering. That would have really helped. we didn't have that. So we started our cost improvement journey from a standing start. And in year one, we only drove out sort of £1.7 million worth of savings. But in year two, £10 million worth of savings came out. And in the last year, £7.5 million worth of savings. So again, from a standing start, now with good quality data, we're able to really target the areas where we improve.
And I suppose, again, going back to the general public, someone listening to the radio at the moment might well be thinking, hang on, they had a 10 million overspend, but they're talking about 10 million savings. How does that work?
So, I mean, they're on different lines. So, you know, we would have been £20 million overspent had we have not delivered those savings. So last year, you know, had we have not taken sort of 10 million out worth of cash out and efficiency savings, that overspend last year would have been closer to 20 million. So we managed to develop new services, respond to significant inflation in terms of pay awards and contract uplifts, whilst, you know, having a settlement which was less than what we expected. You know, in any health and care system, to have improved services and only overspent by that amount, I think you would consider that was, you know, a success. But I absolutely get that the credibility of Manx Care is around its ability to manage its finances well. My job and the job of the Manx Care Board is to make sure and demonstrate that every single pound spent on health and care has been spent wisely and efficiently. There are some broader questions and conversations about what the true costs of healthcare is on the island, and consequently, what are the priorities for health and care? Because we can't have it all. We can't have it all for that financial envelope.
And of course, the 2024 mandate for Manx Care, which is produced, well, this is a question, I suppose. Is it produced by the Department of Health and Social Care acting in isolation? Does Manx Care do most of the work, and then DHSC cast their eye over it and say, actually, we want to change this, or we want to improve that?
It's developed by the Department of Health and Social Care, but with really close involvement of Manx Care. So we have been working, our respective teams have been working on the mandate for the best part of 9 months before it gets published. You know, I understand the department's position. They have to see a level of ambition. It's an expectation that Tim Wald can see real clear priority setting, a clear set of key performance indicators by which Manx Care will be managed, and it has to be suitably ambitious. It has to test us. My job, and we've received the mandate, my job now is to translate that mandate into an operating plan which means something for our services. We say how we're going to do it. We're going to say this is what we can do, this is what we can't do. The clear message that I've given to all of the services who are helping me do a bottom-up response to the mandate is that we must continue to provide high-quality, safe care, which means responding to all of the requirements set out by the Care Quality Commission and Ofsted. We must respond and do as much of the mandate as we can, and we must make demonstrable progress against those five priorities, but we must do it within the budget we have been set.
And what interested me, and I have to say I haven't read in great detail, but I've gone through a fair amount of the 2024 Manx Care mandate. What seemed strangely absent was references to patient and actual delivery of good outcomes for people who aren't well. What was throughout the document was you must do better in terms of being more efficient, driving through savings, You know, it was very much a forensic accountant document rather than someone who has spent their life training and gaining experience to deliver really good health outcomes to patients.
Yeah, I think it has to be written in a certain way. It has to be sort of outlining. It is a commissioning document. It's basically saying to Manx Care, this is what the department needs you to do. What you then see, and you'll have seen it in last year's operating plan from Manx Care, is we do that translation. So we write our operating plan in a way which hopefully the staff in Manx Care really understand what that means. And our patients, our service users and our residents see what that means for them. So the language we use is quite different from the language the Department of Health and Social Care use. We're all pulling in the same direction at wanting to achieve the same ends, but ultimately Manx Care's job is, how are we going to do this? And we always have at the forefront of our minds when we write these documents what this means for the user. What does this mean for our patients, our service users? And I hope that comes across in the stylistics of the document. They're not unaligned. They're both addressing the five priority areas. But it is really important that Manx Care describes it in a way which means something to the staff and the end user.
Do we spend too much time in government writing documents and strategies? And maybe, because using the analogy that I used earlier, if we go back to when I was emerging at the Jane Crucial, most of the staff there were getting on and delivering their, excuse the pun, but you know, their day job. They weren't too bothered about strategies and reports and documents and what have you. They just got on with what they were paid to do. Now, I kind of see that we live in a different age and, you know, scrutiny is intense, so you have to be able to demonstrate and prove things. And indeed, you have to be able to demonstrate and prove things in case to stop yourself getting sued. But are we over-focused perhaps on strategies and plans and commissioning documents and the like?
Possibly, and there is a need for us to be quite agile in the processes. You know, we always you do need a strategy, but we also need processes which are agile and responsive. You know, we always have to think, and you're absolutely right. We have a job to do. I have a job to do, sort of to balance making sure this is meaningful to the person on the front line. Whilst also being able to demonstrate transparency, scrutiny, and ultimately demonstrating that we are running a well-managed, well-governed organisation which is delivering safe care.
The best way to demonstrate that is that, for example, my father is probably getting to an age now where he needs more support to live in his own home. Although if he's listening, he'd probably be saying, "No, I'm fine. Don't be talking nonsense." The real success story for you is if he actually feels that actually he does want to talk to Manx Care. He doesn't feel threatened by the thought that he'll end up in a home or a hospital, because he actually trusts you, sees lots of examples of success and delivery. And actually, no amount of report writing and documents demonstrating success are going to outweigh the actual experience of patients.
Absolutely. And that's really, really important. There's always the sort of the data and the evidence and the governance which tells you whether you're doing a good job. But actually, patient or service user feedback is the other triangle, bit of the triangle, which tells you whether you're doing a good job or not. And that's why over those 3 years, there's been a real focus on getting feedback from the patient experience and also learning from when things don't go well. So, for example, the Manx Care Advice and Liaison Service, we do know that 93% of the people who respond to the friends and family test describe their experience of services in Manx Care as good or very good. That's really, really positive for the 7% of people who haven't had such a good experience. It's really important we learn from that. So again, it comes back to that balance of governance and bureaucracy, but we must learn. So I look at every complaint which comes into the organisation. We cleared a huge backlog of complaints when Manx Care started. We have introduced duty of candour, which means that when things do go wrong, we're very open and transparent about that with the patient. And then we learn from when things aren't going quite right. So if we have a serious incident, you know, there's been a suggestion that we've put too much layers of governance into the organisation. You know, one of the areas, I talked about clinical coding, and one of the other really strong functions of clinical coding is that you can look at mortality. We have medical examiners, senior doctors in the organisation who help make sure that we look at deaths and learning from deaths. None of that existed. People could challenge us and say that is extra layers of governance. No, I would argue really, really strongly, this is about evidencing and demonstrating and being able to reassure the public we are delivering really safe care, and we know when things haven't gone right, and we have investigation processes to make sure we learn. We must be a learning organisation, but that requires us to collect data, scrutinise what happened, hold people to account, and look at how we respond when things haven't gone well, and adopt a continuous improvement. Now that is extra scrutiny on the organisation internally, but I hope that goes a long way to starting to demonstrate both to our staff who have professional registrations to maintain, but also the public in terms of using the services. Actually, you can be assured of safe, good quality services from Manx Care. And if you don't get that, and if it does go wrong for whatever reason, there will be a process put in place to make sure the organisation learns from what hasn't gone well for you, whether that's a small-ish matter around complaint or whether that is something much more serious. Health and care is incredibly complex. It's incredibly high risk. No one is in hospital because they don't need to be in hospital. Some of the interventions and interactions and the provision of healthcare is highly complex, and it's not risk-free. And that's why this open and transparent culture about when things aren't quite right needs to be really, really ingrained. It needs to be not feared by our staff. And it needs to be open so the public feel that they can raise concerns when things don't go right.
And on that subject, one of the things that shocked me that you've said, you actually said it at a Liberal Venon Party meeting that I attended, was that you, in your professional experience, your life to date, the Isle of Man has served up some of the worst abuse that you've witnessed.
Yes, I've only ever worked in health and care. I trained as a radiographer 30 years ago. I worked as a clinician for a number of years before going into managerial roles, and I come across to the island with 30 years' experience of leading health and care, having worked in hospitals, having worked in mental health services, having worked in the community, having worked in social care. And yes, it's something which really shocked me. It's something that really disappointed me. And I felt it very personally. You know, I've come across to the island. I moved my family over here. I'm a wife, I'm a mother. And I want to do a really, really good job. I care deeply about the job that I do. You know, I work excessive hours of my own choice, 60, 70 hour weeks, with a real commitment and a passion for health and care and making this the best small island health and care system in the world. So it was something that I wasn't prepared for. But also, you know, I know from some of our staff that's what they sometimes experience as well. And it's not right. You know, I think at that point where I was talking about the Liberal Vanin meeting, it was a particularly difficult time where I was getting an awful lot of really awful feedback on social media. And I actually reached out to a couple of those people and, you know, said, have you had a really poor experience of healthcare? Do you want to meet me? You know, can I meet you? Because you're saying really awful things about me and you've not met me and I don't believe you've come into contact with services. You know, can I meet you? And they refused to meet me. So, you know, I don't think I can do anything more than keep trying to do the best job I can. But I feel for, and that's just for me on a personal level, but I feel for our staff who do such a great job every day. I'm humbled when I go out into our services and see the work they do. They are just amazing, amazing. And I feel for them when they get that negativity, either face-to-face on an individual basis, or when they have to read all of the negativity about Manx Care. Because what they will say to me is, Teresa, I don't have a right to reply. It would be against my professional code of conduct to respond individually. But I have something to say. And so that's where I sort of, you know, through the Manin line and through whatever vehicle I can, advocate for those staff. Because I genuinely wish people could see the work they do every day.
And of course, what you're not saying is that people shouldn't have a right to criticise.
Not at all.
You know, but
it needs to be constructive.
There's you know, a polite way of criticising and a very impolite way, isn't there?
There is. And you know, if you've had a poor experience of care, we absolutely do want to hear about it. We would want to try and make sure that it's addressed and it doesn't happen again for you. I guess just the sort of generic Manx care bashing is deeply, deeply concerning. It affects morale across the organisation. It becomes self-fulfilling because then everyone thinks Manx care is an awful place to work and actually isn't. You know, we've just done a whole organisation-wide survey, staff survey. It's demonstrating we are making lots of improvements, that people enjoy coming to work here. And, you know, I've been out on, I think I did 35 visits to services during January and February. And I hear that from staff. You know, they feel supported. I deliver the induction for all new starters every month. And I meet every single one of those new starters. And I talk to every single one of them about the role they're doing, but also what's brought them here. And at that point, they'll have been working for us about 3 or 4 weeks. What have they enjoyed about their first 3 or 4 weeks with Manx Care? And they all love the island. It's been, they've loved the organisation. They've all been made incredibly welcome in those first few weeks. And what they say to us, which is the really important part when you are a health and care professional, is they feel Manx Care supports them to do the job properly, to have the time with those service users, those patients, because many of them have come from the UK NHS, where the pressures and demands of that system is not allowing professionals to do their roles to the full ability. So they're having to cut corners, and that affects them deeply from an emotional perspective, a psychological perspective. But it also means they worry about their professional registration. So when people are negative about Manx Care without real evidence and justification, it really disappoints me, because we're never going to be the best small island healthcare system in the world whilst there are people who are just going to focus on detracting and putting negativity into what we do. And the more I can do to try and give those counter messages and advocate primarily for the brilliant staff we have in Manx Care, I will just keep doing that.
That was Manx Care's Chief Executive, Teresa Cope. So what do you think? Do you feel that Manx Care is on the right track to help us lead healthier lives? Are you concerned at ever-increasing budgets with limited clear improvements in service? perhaps you've had some really good experiences of Manx Care and wish to applaud them for their efforts. I'm hoping to delve a bit deeper into how Manx Care can deliver improved services soon, so please let me know your thoughts on the programme and Manx Care services by contacting philgorn@manxradio.com, and I'll do my best to get answers to your questions. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. I'm Phil Gorn. Gormaus yn geisiachrwm. Thanks for listening.